Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
We're back for a brand new week of Drive Time Sports right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy to be back with you, boys. So much happened over the weekend. We had a ton going on in the world of college football. A lot of movement as far as the top 25 rankings go. LSU, number 5, upended by Florida. Loss. Oklahoma, number 7 in the country. 3-point loss in the hands of Texas. Out of the top 10. A lot of movement. Kentucky, number 13, suffers a loss in overtime. Auburn, they were all the way up to number 8 in the country, suffers their second loss. They dip all the way to number 21. Four teams who are not ranked now in the top 25. Texas A&M, South Florida, Mississippi State, and Cincinnati. So a lot of movement in college football. Stanford, they were ranked. Back-to-back losses. The Utah Utes take care of business in a very big way. So like I said, a lot going on in the world of college football. We have to talk college football a little bit later on in the show. All kinds of great stuff in the NFL yesterday as well. Two unbeaten teams still remain. It took some doing, but the Los Angeles Rams topped the Seattle Seahawks at CenturyLink Field 33-31. And then on top of that, the Kansas City Chiefs had no problems with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Who's the best team in the NFL right now? Is it the Rams or is it the Chiefs? Now, the Rams showed some obvious flaws defensively yesterday, and again, Kansas City looked great. Only two unbeaten teams left. Sunday Night Football last night, the Dallas Cowboys falling to the Houston Texans. And then Major League Baseball going on right now. The Houston Astros punched their ticket to the ALCS by defeating the Cleveland Indians earlier today 11-3 in a game in which Cleveland was actually leading late in the contest. This Astros team is so good. Again, I just don't see anyone beating Houston, even in the World Series. I just don't, not with the way this team is playing. Houston scores 9 runs in the 7th and 8th inning, and then they added one more in the 9th to pick up an 11-3 win. They sweep the Cleveland Indians. They join the Milwaukee Brewers and clinching a spot in their prospective league's championship series. Houston will await the New York Yankees or the Boston Red Sox. And that brings us to our schedule in Major League Baseball right now. The Los Angeles Dodgers are taking on the Atlanta Braves. The Dodgers had a chance for a sweep last night. Couldn't do it. Atlanta scored 5 runs in the 2nd inning. A grand slam by Ronald Acuña Jr. And the Dodgers fought back to tie it. Couldn't get over the hump. Atlanta picks up a 6-5 win. Now, this game right now is in the bottom of the 4th inning, going into the 5th inning, and the Dodgers lead the Atlanta Braves 1-0. We'll keep tabs on this contest throughout the afternoon, and it is Monday, so we will catch up with Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher. We love Bill Lasky. He joins us each week to talk Major League Baseball on the show. We'll get his thoughts on the Dodgers, and also we'll talk about tonight's big matchup between the Red Sox and the Yankees. It's a pivotal game. Tied at 1 apiece. It's going back to the Bronx. Luis Severino was on the hill tonight for New York. I like the Yankees to win tonight. I think this series goes 5, but I like the Yankees to win tonight. I like the Red Sox to win game 4, and then I think we go to that pivotal game 5. But Major League Baseball has been so entertaining over the last few days. I mean, some excellent, excellent matchups. Now, outside of that, we also had a big fight on Saturday, which we talked about in depth last week on the show. One of the biggest fights in UFC history. Khabib McGregor. And this fight played out pretty similar to the way I expected. I thought that Khabib would take control on the ground. I did not expect Conor McGregor to win this fight. We had Larry Pepe, pro MMA analyst. He said the same thing. Khabib's just too good on the mat. He took care of Conor McGregor, dominated the entire fight. And I think to the surprise of very few, picked up a one-sided win, and he got McGregor to actually submit in this contest. It was after the fight. Khabib climbs the gate, goes after members of Conor's entourage, and then you had individuals, I'm assuming, associated with Khabib climbing into the cage, going after Conor McGregor. It was mayhem. Dana White refused to put the belt on Khabib, and now there's talk that he could actually be stripped of his belt. And I don't think he cares, because ultimately, I don't think Khabib is ever going to fight again. But his $2 million paycheck is being held right now by the Nevada State Athletic Commission. It released McGregor's $3 million payday, but now intends to file a complaint against him as well after reviewing tape that was not immediately available on fight night. Whatever that means, I don't know. But it was a bad night for the UFC. You know the old saying, all publicity is good publicity? That's not entirely true. And I thought the Ferguson and the Pettis fight before Conor Khabib was excellent. Tip your hat to Ferguson returning to the ring or the cage. It's like 6-7 months after knee injury. I thought it was a tremendous fight. It was a tremendous performance. Both fighters had respect for one another. Now, you knew that McGregor and Khabib, they weren't going to show any signs of respect. They just genuinely do not like each other. Khabib did his talking in the cage, and I thought that would be the end of it. No, it wasn't the end of it. And unfortunately, on Monday and even yesterday, we're not talking about the brilliance of Khabib, who is now 27-0. We're talking about the fact that he's not getting paid. The melee that went on after, the Nevada State Athletic Commission has to get involved. And I'm also going to point this out, that Dana White is full of crap. That guy's a phony. There was no sanctions, nothing, towards Conor McGregor as he caused massive damage by attacking a bus months ago. Wasn't faced with a suspension. I mean, nothing. Because Conor makes money, right? He refused to put the belt on Khabib because he said people were going to erupt and start throwing things into the cage. No, he was upset that his guy lost. Khabib's not a moneymaker. For as great as he is, he's not a moneymaker. Conor McGregor is. Dana White is full of it. He's upset that his guy was beat by a superior wrestler. Khabib publicly apologized to the commission Saturday. Now he's facing a possible fine and suspension. But here's my question. Why isn't Conor faced with any sanctions at all? Any possible suspensions after what he did months and months ago? It kind of floats along the lines of certain people, certain individuals have special privileges. Conor has special privileges in the UFC. I mean, really, he does. It's a different topic for a different day. Scoreboard update. The Atlanta Braves have actually captured a 2-1 lead over the Dodgers in the bottom of the fourth inning as we go to the fifth. And so the Braves, they're not backing down. This young team is in position to actually force a decisive Game 5. We'll talk more Major League Baseball in just a bit. Right now, we've got to get out for a quick commercial break. Local sports recap is coming up. When we return, we'll be joined by Coach Brett Johnson of the Carbon Dino Golf Squad, and we'll also catch up with Bill Lasky a little bit later on in the show. It is a Monday edition of Drive Time Sports, and it's right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Back after this. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And we will begin on the high school football field, where Friday night the Carbon Dinos suffered a 42-0 loss to the Morgan Trojans at home. The Dinos found themselves in a massive hole early as Morgan scored 21 points in the first quarter and added 14 more in the second. Morgan quarterback Carter Thackeray was on point throughout the entire night. He delivered 3 touchdown passes. Offensively, Carbon had moderate success on a couple of drives, but could not punch it into the end zone. The loss now dips Carbon to 1-3 in region play, and with only one 3A North game remaining, Carbon will close out the regular season Friday at home against Judge Memorial. Friday's contest will be a massive one for Carbon. A win means that the Dinos will in fact play host to a home playoff game. A loss coupled with an Emory win means that Carbon would travel on the road. And a Carbon loss coupled with an Emory loss means there will be a 3-way tie where a coin flip would decide who would get the home playoff game between Emory and Judge Memorial. Friday's action will be live on our sister station, KRPX 95.3 The Peak, beginning at 6:30 with the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show. Kickoff will follow shortly after at 7. We stick to the high school football scene, but we move over to Emory High. And Friday night, the Spartans suffered a 42-7 loss to the Union Cougars, also dipping Emory to 1-3 in 3A North play. Emory battled tough. In fact, they led 7-0 at the end of the first quarter. Union scored 2 touchdowns in the second to take a slim 14-7 lead into the break. The third quarter is where Union took over as they scored 21 points and added 7 more in the fourth. The lone touchdown of the evening came from James Bowman on a 10-yard run. Brock Winter finished off the drive with the PAT. Again, Emory is now 1-3 overall. They'll wrap up the regular season at home this Friday against the Grantsville Cowboys on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Live coverage will begin at 6:30 PM with the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show, followed by kickoff at 7. Do not forget, you can also listen to Carbon and Emory High School football online from wherever you're at by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. We move over to high school soccer, and the 3A state championship tournament is set. Setting up what's going to be a very exciting week on the girls' soccer field. Tomorrow, the Carbon Dinos and the Emory Spartans will actually battle in the opening round of the 3A state tournament. Both squads qualified as the number 3 seed from their region. Carbon, the number 3 seed from Region 14, and Emory, the number 3 seed from Region 15. Tomorrow's contest is scheduled to begin at 4 p.m. at Carbon High School. The winner will move on to face Judge Memorial next week. Whoever comes out on the short end of the stick season will ultimately come to an end. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll have more on both the Emory and the Carbon soccer squads in the coming days. We move over to USU Eastern Soccer. And this past weekend, the men's squad picked up 2 victories over Colorado Northwestern, both by forfeit, on what was a slim weekend for USU Eastern Soccer. Originally, the men were scheduled to travel on the road to Craig, Colorado to take on the Colorado Northwestern Spartans, but a lack of players earned USU Eastern both victories, improving the men in conference play to 3-5. Now, the USU Eastern's men's squad will continue the SWAC season on Wednesday. They'll travel to Henderson, Nevada to take on the College of Southern Nevada before meeting Snow College, also on the road this Friday. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Let's talk some local golf on this Monday edition of the Coach's Corner. The 2018 season, it's complete. Can't believe it. Last week it came to a close and the Carbon Dinos finished 5th overall in the state, dropped a couple of spots in the final day of the state tournament, but still a phenomenal year, first year under head coach Brett Johnson, who is joining us right now over the phone. Coach, great to get you back on today. Thank you.
Thanks for having me again, Jordan.
Definitely, Coach. The season is complete. It went by in a flash. There's no question about that. About a week ago, it came to an end, Coach. You guys traveled to Meadowbrook in Taylorsville, 2-day competition. All in all, Carbon finishes 5th overall. And I know throughout the season, we knew this was a top 5 team, Coach. And I guess historically looking at it, it's the 4th consecutive year that Carbon has finished in the top 5. So it's an accomplishment in itself. But I want your assessment of how the kids played.
Overall, I was really pleased with our play. The second day, really kind of got it. I'm not sure if it was nerves or what really happened that second day, if we were just trying too hard to kind of chase Morgan. But overall, I was really pleased. After the first day, you know, before the state tournament, I said that if we could shoot around the 300 to 310, we'd be in a good position. And after the first day, we shot 311. And we had 4 scores in the 70s. I was really happy with our first day play. And then the second day, we just struggled a little bit. And, you know, it is what it is. I was overall very pleased with our boys.
We'll start by talking about the first day, Coach, because you guys were third going into day number two, and there were some great scores on day one. Brady Gagan, I know, shot a 75. Carson Martinez and Nick Olson both at 79, and Caden Slavinsky was at a 78. So it's you guys were actually in contention going into day number two. I know Morgan did develop quite the hefty lead, but barring, you know, some sort of collapse, you guys were within striking distance. What was the difference between the 2 days? Was weather an issue? I know you just said that maybe you guys were trying to track down Morgan. You put a lot of pressure on yourself. Did the kids take more risks? I mean, what was the determining factor in your mind between the 2 days?
The 2 days, especially the second day, just watching the kids, a lot of putts just didn't fall for us. You know, I watched Carson Martinez miss about six or seven birdies that, you know, usually he makes. Same with Brady, Nick, and even Caden. You know, Caden, he had a tough, I think his third hole, he took an eight. And so that really put him back a little bit. But, you know, he finished strong. I know it wasn't the number that he wanted to shoot, but with taking a high number like that, it's really hard to come back and shoot a good number.
All in all, when you go back and you look at some of the individuals, I mean, Brady Gagan, he was right there. I know after the first day, just a couple of shots back of the leader. Unfortunately, he takes an 83 in day two. Coach, at the end of day one, how confident were you and the boys on you guys, you know, maybe even grabbing a top two finish?
I think maybe kind of played in a little bit. Maybe we were a little too confident that we had a really, I mean, we were four shots back of second place. And I knew if we shot anywhere around that 310, 300, I knew that we would take second for sure. And it would have, if we would have shot that number, we would have taken it. So that kind of hurts a little bit, but all in all, I was really proud of my boys.
Do you take more risks, Coach? Do you encourage the boys to take risks when you're at the state tournament and you're trying to make up strokes? Because, I mean, really, there is no tomorrow. I mean, is that something that you encourage?
Yeah, for sure, especially on that golf course. There's really not a whole lot of trouble that we can get into, especially on the par fives. I feel like we should definitely try and take advantage of hitting them in two. There's some short par fours. If you can be aggressive and put it in the right spot, there's good chances to make up some strokes. The weather was actually pretty good. It didn't rain on us at all. The wind was up a little bit, but when it comes down to it, we just didn't make some crucial shots at good times. So,
golf is definitely a day-to-day game. Proof of that is that Union finds a way to climb into that number four spot, and Richfield finishes just five strokes better than Carbon. I mean, there was a log jam, 13 strokes back of Judge for second place. So, I mean, anywhere from second all the way down to, I guess, fifth place, Coach. I mean, it was extremely close. And even with that being said, you guys were only five strokes better than North St. Pete. So the parity was there. I mean, there was a lot of competition at this event.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said before, we were a top five team coming in. You know, we finished fifth. I reiterate that we definitely had a really good shot at being number two or even number three.
Yeah.
Just kind of at the end, just kind of got to us a little bit, but, you know, got to take it with a grain of salt, I guess, and move on from there.
All in all, Coach, I'm sure you still consider this a very successful season.
Yeah, for sure. We took care of business for our region. I think maybe next year we need to prepare a little bit more, be a little bit more mentally focused for our next region. Even if I'm not sure because they do a realignment, but whoever's in our region next year to take it a little bit more serious, I think will kind of prepare us for that state. And I think it's good that the kids got a little bit more competition out of it, because we played with the Morgan kids, and I mean, those kids were phenomenal. I was really impressed with their team. They knew how to play some golf, and I was really impressed.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Brett Johnson of the Carbon High School Golf Squad. Coach, let's move on and talk about a couple of seniors on this year's squad. I mean, I guess the good news is you only have two seniors, right?
Yes. We had two seniors, Carson Martinez and Tyler Yakovich.
Let's talk about Carson Martinez. He was kind of that second golfer for you guys throughout most of the year. It seemed like for the most part you could rely on Carson to deliver you guys pretty consistent numbers. And I, you know, that's a big reason as to why you guys won a region championship.
Yeah, definitely. He was a good leader on the team. He had a great work ethic. I want every one of my younger kids to look up to Carson and to see how hard he worked, how he stayed after for practice and worked on his game, stuff that he needed to work on. And it showed. His first four or five matches, he struggled. But towards the end of the season, he really picked up his game and played to where he usually plays at.
Let's talk about Tyler. Again, this is the second senior on this year's squad, Coach. I know that there wasn't a whole lot of opportunity for you guys to use his scores, but at the same time, golf is 1 through 6, even though only 4 scores are counted. I mean, so all 6 golfers are key.
Yeah, you never know day-to-day what kid's going to come out and, you know, have the feeling on the golf course and kind of find his game during the golf round. And I was really impressed with Tyler. It was actually his first state tournament, being his senior year. And so the nerves were out, and he struggled the first day a lot. And I blame that with nerves and, you know, not being in that kind of situation before. But the second day, he really, I mean, he changed big time. His first day, he got 102, and then the second day he shot 87. So, I mean, that was a drastic change for him, and I was really impressed.
Coach, when the season came to a close and you had one last talk with the boys, I'm sure it's sad because these kids are never going to be able to golf on the same team together as a unit again, but you had a lot of youth. What was the attitude like among those kids coming back?
It's definitely a little disappointing, because I think they understood and they know where they could have been. Second place was just, you know, right there for them. And I think that was a little disappointing for them. To be beaten by Union, I know that really hurt, just because we've owned Union all year. But, I mean, at the end of the day, they played better than us. I think they'll take that as a little, you know, just a little bit more extra drive for next year to play a little bit more golf and to get a little bit better.
Sure. Yeah, between now and then, Coach, what are some of the steps that you take going into your second year as head coach to kind of prepare this team? I mean, do you change some things? Did you pick up on some things that you want to make sure you implement next year that maybe you didn't this year?
Yeah, they need to play in tournament golf. They have youth leagues and junior golf leagues up north that can really make a difference towards tournament play. Because just going out there and playing by yourself or with your buddies, it's definitely a little bit different than being out on a golf course, you know, with some better golfers from up north. And to really just make you want to play better, I think that's a big step for our kids to get into tournament golf during the summertime more.
Well, Coach, it's definitely been a pleasure to talk with you throughout the entire season. I'm so grateful for the time that you have given us to kind of dissect the team and get updates from your perspective. Congratulations on a successful first year, and I know before we know it, we'll be talking about next season. So, I appreciate the time this year, Coach.
I appreciate it, Jordan.
That's Coach Brett Johnson of the Carbon Dino Golf Squad. We've got a break for just a moment. When we return, we'll talk some Major League Baseball. A game going on right now between the Dodgers and the Braves. Atlanta trying to force a Game 5. We'll talk about that when we return on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We're back at Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios, KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 a.m. Mondays are the best, especially when you have baseball going on right now. Great game between the Dodgers and the Braves actually taking place now as we go to the sixth inning in this one. The Braves are in control right now, and joining us to talk a bit about that and some of the other storylines heading around Major League Baseball, we have Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher and analyst for the San Francisco Giants. He's a little bit all over the place, and Bill, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. Thank you again for the time today.
Well, as they always say, when the leaves turn brown, you know, you get the top teams, you know, cheering in the playoffs. And sure enough, Jordan, you know, Houston sweeping three, Milwaukee sweeping three over the Rockies. That kind of surprised me. But these other two series with the Yankees in Boston and Atlanta and L.A. are definitely coming to fashion here with a couple good games. As you said, Atlanta taking the lead in this one today.
You know what's so funny to me? You mentioned the Rockies. They had to go through a tiebreaker for the division. They had to go through a one-game wild card, and then they had a series with the Milwaukee Brewers. And out of all that, they got one home game.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great call right there. Tell you, the series, you know, when you go 162 games and you're tied at the end, the one-game playoff against L.A., I really thought that was all momentum right there. If they would have won that game, I think the momentum would have stayed with them. Going into Chicago, going extra innings, no runs again. The run support was just, you know, it was nothing there. And then they go to Milwaukee, and they just couldn't play well in Milwaukee. It just seemed like the momentum shift changed on them. They played so well in the month of September, and when it came to playoff baseball, the bats just weren't there.
Well, they kind of lived and died, I guess, by three individuals at the plate all year long, didn't they?
Yeah, I looked at that, too, the storyline on all three of those. Arenado just hit the wall. And you look at Story, and sure, they hit back-to-back home runs or something in Milwaukee, but that the game was out of hand at that time. The key hits were runners on base, and I go back to Carlos Gonzalez, you know, the right fielder. He didn't do much at all. Blackman really didn't have a good series, and I look at that offense, and I really thought they would generate 5 to 6 runs a game, and it just didn't happen.
Well, let's move over to the other NL series, because right now the Braves are up on top of the Dodgers, and they avoided a sweep last night, Bill, and the Dodgers scored 5 runs. Now, I felt that's the way Atlanta was going to have to win anything in this series. I mean, you're going to have to outscore this Dodger team. You're going to have to put up 6, 7, 8, 9 runs. Acuña goes yard on a grand slam last night. Today, it's more low scoring. I mean, Rich Hill has not been bad for the Dodgers. He's given up 2 runs, and yet the Braves find themselves out in front. Today surprises me. Last night, not so much, because you're going to have to score runs to beat this Dodger team.
You do, and their bullpen's so strong, and you know, you and I've talked several times throughout the year about how good pitching staffs are. And we look at it now in the playoffs, and the bullpen has now got a couple starters in it. You saw Boston go to it. You see teams go into more of a bullpen game. They have no thought pattern of when we're going to take the starter out. They can put anybody in any time because they have so many bodies down there. But you can see the bodies that are true test pitchers when they're going through the playoffs and some guys that struggle with command and they get out of it or they don't get out of it. But I tell you what, you can see the experience so quickly when you see teams like Atlanta, who's never been there in a while. The Dodgers are a little stronger, but they're weak at times, too, in some of their starters. It really is the pitching matchups in this and how long do you keep your starter and how long do you go one inning each guy. So baseball's changed. We talk about this all the time. But pitching, the dynamics of pitching and using your pitchers are so key, and you see more of it going to the bullpen part.
I was amazed last night, Atlanta going to the bullpen early and taking Newcomb out of a game, and it almost backfired on him. And then the Dodgers do the same thing. They go to the bullpen. They bring in Alex Wood, who was a traditional starter. I know he fell out of the rotation late in the regular season, but again, we're talking about a traditional starter. And that's when Freddie Freeman was able to go yard. I mean, so I guess you can look at it both ways, Bill. I'm not a fan of it, and I know you're not either.
I'm not. And, you know, I go back to another thing when Oakland lost to the Yankees. Here's 5 starters they had all year. And you don't use a starter in the one-game playoff. You go to bullpenning. And you use the guy that was really DFA'd in the month of June, and he got hot a little bit for you. I just didn't understand that tactic that the Oakland A's did, and it cost them because he gives up a 2-run home run He walks McCutcheon. Judge hits a home run. And the A's are behind, and they never had enough to catch up. I don't understand the theories. There must be some theories that you and I miss on this. But I believe a starting pitcher can give you at least three or four innings in any kind of playoff game.
Let's jump to tonight's contest. Again, we're being joined by Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher, as we jump around the bigs. Tonight, primetime matchup, we get the Red Sox and the Yankees, a pivotal game three. Luis Severino is going to be out on the mound tonight for the Yankees. Bill, I actually like New York to win tonight. I like this series to go five games, but I think the Yankees are in a prime spot to put Boston in a must-win situation in the Bronx going into game four, which would just be phenomenal considering that this team won 108 games in the regular season. But New York taking one of the first two in Boston changes the entire complexion of the series.
I agree 100% with you. And now Boston's going to have to come out and put some crooked numbers on the board and really get some run support if they're going to pull something out against New York. The fans in New York are louder. They're vicious. They're going to be into this game so much, as well as the Yankees. The Yankees know they put them on edge by winning that second game in Boston. Now it turns into a three-game series, and two of them are in New York. So the edge has to go to the Yankees. And the Yankees have a powerful lineup. That lineup's pretty strong. So does Boston. But it comes down to Boston's bullpen and Boston pitching. And I think that's what's hurting them right now. They don't have anybody that's going to be lights out unless it's Kimbrel. And you saw him give up a home run when he came in that game. So I don't think there's anybody in that bullpen the Yankees are fear of.
Well, I definitely don't, and I feel bad saying this because I love Chris Sale. I don't know that I trust him in the postseason. I don't know that I trust David Price in the postseason. And I think a lot of pundits would agree with that. That's why the Red Sox weren't overwhelming favorites in a five-game set. A seven-game set's completely different. But in five games, there's some issues with this Boston staff, I think, front to back.
I agree with you again. And I tell you what, the Severino who pitched against Oakland was not the same guy that I saw who got lit up by Oakland. He was dialed in. And so what if he only went 2 1/3, 3 1/3? You're getting outs. This is what I've always done with my as a pitching coach. I don't go in and say nine innings. I go for 27 outs. How many guys can get me outs? That's the key when you start looking at playoffs, especially if you get the lead. My mind goes straight. Nine more outs. Six more outs. Three more outs. That's the way they have to think. And then you start looking at matchups, what's in the bullpen. I think the Yankees have a stronger pitching staff than Boston right now.
Let's move to the other AL series. It came to a close earlier today. Houston topping the Indians 11-3. The Astros score nine runs over the final three frames. Bill, the way Cleveland rolled over, I was a little bit disappointed, especially from a Terry Francona team. I did not think Cleveland would win this series. But I was a little bit disappointed the way they rolled over and died. I would actually expect that from a team like Atlanta, based on the fact that they are so young. They're filled with youth. I mean, we're talking about a team with Okuna, and we're talking about Ozzie Albies, and we're talking about Camargo. This is a team full of youth. The Indians are not. That's disappointing to me.
It surprised me. It surprised me in just the way they play today, making three errors. It surprised me not getting many hits. Kluber didn't pitch that well on opening night. Houston just has an offense that just keeps coming back at you. You know, you look at the eight guys up there. There really isn't a real easy out where some of these other lineups, you've got a couple guys that you can get through. But it just seems like Houston's rocking right now. The Astros are looking for back-to-back championships. And right now, they just destroyed the Indians. They're going to have a hard time with both the Yankees and Red Sox. That's going to be a good series, but I still think the edge goes to Houston now with a little couple days left where they can get some rest on those starting pitching and bullpen. And again, I think Houston's got a good run to get back in that World Series.
Well, I agree with you. We can't forget that last year it went to seven games in the ALCS with the Yankees as well. So we could be setting up for an epic showdown considering the Yankees go out. They spent a lot of money on Stanton. We may get a rematch of that last year. But Bill, let me ask you this. As far as I'm trying to think of the way I want to word this. So you were just mentioning rest. You mentioned the rest for the Astros. They can kind of heal up a little bit, get some arms in shape. The Brewers, especially if the Braves win this game, the Brewers are going to have multiple days off to rest up. How big of a factor does that play in the postseason?
You know, I asked that to a few players. I've asked that through a couple of interviews I had, and a lot of them say, as long as they're active each day, as long as they get a 2-3 hour workout, they're fine. It's when they're giving that whole day off, when a manager goes, take the whole day off, enjoy it with your family. He says that's the time when your brain relaxes. That's the time when the edge kind of comes off of you, because you want that edge to watch, and when am I playing next game? When's that first game going to start? When am I going to be ready? Am I going to be in that lineup? He said those are the guys that say that's the edge you want on your team. You don't want relaxed days where your body just mellows out. Relaxed days are going to play golf. Relaxed days are going on a boat ride. He said some of those days will hurt your team, because the mental side is you want that toughness in them. You want to be that whipping guy to be prepared for every playoff game. Sometimes the ample rest hurts you. I remember back when the Giants played the Tigers. The Tigers had almost a week off, and the Giants were playing elimination games. They went into Detroit and swept them 4 games. And it was because the Tigers said the edge was off. We couldn't catch up. We couldn't get our timing back. There was too much time. And you can't have too much time. You got to either start having inter-squad games, live pitching DPs. You got to keep that edge rolling. And that's the only way your managers are going to keep that team from relaxing and getting in that relaxed mode of an offseason.
I know that the Dodgers looked fantastic in games 1 and 2, and I'm not discrediting what they have in the as far as starting pitching goes. And again, they're much more experienced than Atlanta. But at the same time, be it Atlanta or LA, you talk about the edge. I don't know that anyone can top the edge of Milwaukee in the National League right now. And I look at the AL, the way Houston is playing, and knowing the weapons and the options that they have, Bill, it almost feels like we're on a collision course for Houston-Milwaukee.
Yeah, I was looking at the same thing, because when you start looking at these teams and how amped they are and how good they are on paper, and you look at their rosters, those two teams sure stand out to me too. And it would be great. I would love to see it. I'd love to see Milwaukee battle through this. And sure, they picked up some free agents here and there, but they had a great season. And to beat the Cubs and win the division and then sweep Colorado 3 straight, it shows me that some kind of character is coming out of that clubhouse, and that character is pushing them through. We talk about Christian Yelich. I still think he's the heart and backbone of that team right now.
I agree. Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher, always takes out the time to join us on Drive Time Sports to talk some baseball. Bill, before I let you go, I gotta give you a chance to let the listeners know where they can find you.
Yeah, you can reach out to me at Twitter at Lasky19. And like I said, I'm a fan now. I love this part of the year. I love watching the games and the matchups. And at the same time, I'm looking to see what the Giants are going to be doing next year. So had some good meetings today and some staff meetings that I just got some action to be part of, and to listen to some of the things they said about some of the players. It's interesting to hear it. And looking forward to seeing what they're going to do, because they're looking for a general manager as well as baseball ops. And a lot of fresh things coming through with some new ideas. So interesting stuff, but at the same time, you know, this time of the year, Jordan, you and I love to talk baseball, and I've always enjoyed it, and I hope your fans as well as everybody at your station enjoys it as well as you and I do.
No, I definitely have a great time with it, Bill. Hopefully we'll do it again next week.
Excellent, Andrew. Do you have a good one? Let's see who's going to get in this World Series. That's going to be the key as we keep working through October.
No doubt. Thank you again, Bill.
All right, Jordan, have a good one.
We've got to break one last time. When we return, we'll talk some football. And one of those days where an hour is just not enough. It's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750 with Jordan Buscarini.
Yeah, running down a dream that never would come to me.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM, live from the Auto Forum Studios. Scoreboard update for you in the world of Major League Baseball. David Freese laces a 2-RBI single in the top of the 6th inning. The Dodgers are now up on top of the Atlanta Braves 3-2 in a game that's been back and forth. The Braves attempting to extend their season to Game 5 at Chavez Ravine. We'll talk more baseball on the show tomorrow, try to keep you up to date on what's happening in Atlanta. I'm going to bring in Travis Anderson. I want to close out today's show by talking college football. And we have a Monday night game tonight. an intriguing Monday night game in the NFL. But we'll wait till tomorrow to recap the entire Week 5. Travis, taking a look at the new top 25 rankings. Now, there were some upsets. LSU was dropped out of the top 5 with a loss to Florida. Oklahoma, who I thought was the lone chance for the Big 12 to get into the college football playoff. They take a 3-point loss at home to Texas in a game in which they made a terrific come-from-behind effort. They couldn't finish it off. And Notre Dame finds yet another way to get a win. They beat Va Tech on the road. It's a tough environment. The Irish come through flying colors, 3-possession win. And the reason I bring that up is because I thought Oklahoma was the Big 12's one chance to get into the college football playoff. And I know that West Virginia is at number 6 right now. I still don't take them serious. And on top of that, LSU losing really strengthens Notre Dame's chances of getting in, because LSU still has to play Alabama. I believe they still play Georgia too, if I'm not mistaken. Things are shaping up well for the Irish. Now, the Pac-12, I don't view them as a serious contender anymore. There may be 2 Power 5 conferences locked out.
There's 2 teams that you can lock into the playoff, I think, right now. Alabama and Notre Dame. So that leaves 2 spots open, because Notre Dame is going to win out with the remaining schedule. I believe Notre Dame will win out, and I believe Alabama will win out. So you're looking at only 2 spots available for the playoff right now, because Notre Dame and Alabama have 2 of them locked down.
You've been high on Notre Dame all season long.
Yeah, they're for real. They got Ian Bucknell at quarterback, who is better than Winbush. And you and I
have
this.
He's better than Winbush, yeah.
Yeah, you and I were watching Saturday, and we're kind of disappointed in Winbush and the way he's played. I think we can both agree with that. But yeah, Ian Book is doing great things. They got a good offensive line. They run the ball extremely well. And their defense is good. So Notre Dame is going to run the table. They're in. Alabama's in.
Let me ask you this. Looking over scenarios, and this looks good for Notre Dame as well, because they beat Michigan to open up the season.
Yes.
And they did beat them fairly. I know it was
the
a
score doesn't
win.
Indicate the game.
They dominated.
They dominated.
Okay. Michigan is all the way up to number 12 now.
Which is good for Notre Dame.
Which is great for Notre Dame, but it's also great for John Harbaugh, because that talk is kind of dwindled as far as would he be the right guy for the Michigan job. Ohio State right now is sitting at number 3, and I'll tell you, if Notre Dame is in the postseason, if Notre Dame gets into the playoffs, there's a great chance Michigan can still get in.
Yeah.
And that's a team midseason I'm keeping my eye on. I understand that Texas is at number 9 right now at 5-1, but tell me, if Texas runs the table and if Michigan runs the table, are you going to put a one-loss Texas team in that lost to Maryland? Or are you going to put a one-loss Michigan team in? Michigan's still in this, and this Michigan was a squad that I think was floating under the radar.
Yeah, I would put Michigan in over Texas, and don't get me wrong, Texas has played fantastic. I've wrote them off every week, and they continue to win. Impressive on Saturday, beating Oklahoma, but you would have to give the nod to Michigan because of their strength of schedule.
Yeah, they're still in it. I mean, they really are. Penn State's still in this. Washington is all the way back up to number 7 in a one-loss Washington squad. And again, they lost to Auburn. Auburn has now lost 2 games, though. They've dropped all the way to 21.
That hurts, yeah.
That does not help the Pac-12 at all. I was pretty much counting everybody out when Stanford suffered a loss to Notre Dame, and then Stanford.
I wrote everybody out, yeah.
I mean, I don't see anyone from the Pac-12 getting in, especially with Notre Dame. They are the ultimate roadblock right now. But I was on another show earlier today, and I was asked why I'm not high on West Virginia. Okay, why am I discounting West Virginia? I don't know if you paid attention to what they did over the weekend, but they beat Kansas by 2 scores, in which Will Grier, he turned the ball over 4 times.
They didn't play well, yeah.
They didn't play well. Kansas is horrible. Here's a trivia question for you. How many commits does Kansas have for their 2019 class?
I will say 2.
1. They had 2. He decommitted. One of them decommitted and went to Wisconsin over the weekend.
You have to beat Kansas by more than 2 scores.
Okay, so this is who they have coming up. They still got to go at Texas.
They're not going to win that game.
They got to go home against Oklahoma.
They don't win that game.
They got a home contest with TCU, and they got to go to Oklahoma State as well. That team's not running the table.
They're 2-2.
That team's not running the table.
No, I don't consider them as a contender. It's Notre Dame, Alabama. And then you got the rest of the teams fighting for 2 spots.
So it's in Michigan's best interest that Notre Dame continues to win, because
yes,
if Michigan runs the table and Notre Dame runs the table, they're both getting in.
There's 3. So you got Alabama, Michigan, yeah, and Notre Dame. And then, Georgia, Ohio State, and the rest of the field playing for the 1 spot.
That Ohio State-Michigan game could be the biggest it has been in quite some time.
Is it at Michigan this year?
I believe it is at Michigan this season.
I think it's at Michigan this year.
There's some really interesting storylines setting up in the world of college football. Let me say this. I believe Alabama is the best team of the country. You believe Alabama is the best team
of
the country. They haven't played anybody yet.
No.
And I want to see what happens when this team plays some steep competition. Texas A&M at times was effective in that game, and that was the most difficult game that they have played up to this point.
And they got a good win against Kentucky this weekend.
They did. They got a great win against Kentucky. Clemson, I'm still not necessarily buying. But look, this is the fact. If Notre Dame goes 12-0, I don't care if Clemson's 12-0. I don't care if Ohio State's 12-0. I don't care if Alabama's 12-0. If Notre Dame goes 12-0, the committee will not keep them out of the postseason, and they are blocking a Power 5 conference from getting in. I guarantee you.
No, I'm with you 100%. Like I said, I think two of the spots are already locked up. I think there's only two available.
The tests for Notre Dame the rest of the way, they get Pitt this weekend, and I think you have to be careful of a letdown game, although Notre Dame is returning home. You got to be careful with that. You have to.
And we've seen they beat Michigan, they came back and they struggled against what, Ball State, but they'll get past Pitt.
Then they have a bye, then they get Navy, then they got to go on the road against Northwestern, they get Florida State at home, who is not a good football team.
Northwestern's decent, but
Syracuse can score points, we know this.
Syracuse is okay.
And then they close out with USC.
And it's a rival, you never know in California.
So they're not, I don't think they're out of the clear yet, but you're saying book it. They're going. They're
book
gonna
it,
be
Notre Dame, Alabama, so two spots available. Save the tape.
I'll save it. This is October 10th. I'll save it. I hope you're right. And we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Scoreboard update for you as we close out. It's still 3-2. The Dodgers in charge of the Atlanta Braves right now as we go to the bottom of the, well, we're going to the seventh inning. We will talk more Major League Baseball on the show tomorrow. Plus, we'll recap week 5 of the NFL season. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.